This is a big story, a story dealing with life and death and even the very idea of life itself, a story of escape and narrow victory, a story of perseverance and redemption, and in the end, we find new hope and new life. A story of a man who wasn't just a man, dying and not really staying dead. A story that combines these common elements of life about the life every one of us leads, and the supernatural and metaphysical parts of an extraordinary life and a most extraordinary response to death. It is a big story, the kind of story we can't very well tell in a single sitting, not in the 10 minutes we give it on a Sunday anyway. So we devote a week to its final week. We gather on Sunday for the palms and the triumphal entry. We share in the celebration of Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem and the coming of the Messiah into the holy city. We remember on Monday as Jesus occupied the temple and drove out the forces of its corruption. We remember on Tuesday how Jesus returned to that temple to teach the people a message of life and witness to the grace of God in spite of the ungraciousness of the temple authorities. We remember on Wednesday how a woman washed Jesus' feet and anointed him for burial in Mark's gospel, and we recall in Luke's this year how Judas began to conspire against Jesus. We receive in communion on Thursday in remembrance of the Last Supper, and we wash each other's feet to participate in humble service to each other. That is part of our tradition. And we tell the story of the Passion on Friday and pray over the death of our Savior. And then Saturday night and Sunday morning, we come together to see what has happened, how the world has changed, to announce the return of Jesus. He was lost, has been found. Where there was death, now there is life. And here we are, Easter, right? The sun has risen, his hour has come and passed, and we behold his coming again. And the story we receive is once again the story of new birth, of the dead coming back to life. It's such a big story, and sometimes when it remains so big, it has the potential to lose some of its power, some of its luster. The detail, by which always captivates me on every reading, is that this big story involves, once again, the failure of these apostles to wrap their heads around what has happened, to grasp the magnitude. For it is not the disciples who arrive at the tomb and believe and receive the good news of Jesus' return. It is, in every single account, the women. Here in the gospel we call John, we have two disciples competing with one another, racing to the tomb, both still competing, it seems, to be, you know, crowned the greatest disciple, even though they were told, stop it. An idea seemingly even lost on the writer, who insists on describing one of them as Jesus' favorite. But it is not until they leave that the two angels appear to Mary Magdalene and tell her of Jesus' return. And then, and only then, does Jesus appear to her. They wait until Peter and the other are gone so that they can tell only her. Then she can relay the message to the others. She can be the first to preach the good news. Now, this is a small detail in a big story, but it is a small detail that embodies the very character of the whole big story. A story which begins in the beginning, or it begins with a miraculous birth, or even at the moment of Jesus' baptism. Wherever we choose to start, we find this story is about presence. A story about God's willingness to be present with us, in spite of us. To be with us in our hurt and in our loss. To come as Emmanuel, as God with us. God with us, not only with the powerful or the male. That God chooses to reveal the truth of Jesus to Mary shouldn't surprise anyone actually reading or following along in this great big story at all. That the angel reveals part of the plan to another Mary, the young unwed woman who would bear the child of God, or going all the way back, skipping over all of these other stories, going back to that first unlikely woman, Sarai, who God speaks directly to and promises to and makes covenant with. God doesn't look for the powerful. God raises up the lowly, the weak, the ignored, and the overlooked. This great big story goes further back than this week and takes weeks and months and years to tell because it does not just begin a week ago or 30 years ago, but thousands and thousands of years ago. It began with the calling of this unlikely couple to go on a journey and promising them a family as big as the night sky. The story of Jesus, the last week, the Passion, Jesus' death and resurrection, the whole Easter story is a story of redemption and reconciliation. It is the story of restoration and bringing us all home. It is the story of life. A story revealed in the outcast and the sinner and the tax collector and the fisherman. A story revealed in the follower and the disciple and the benefactors and the cured. A story revealed in miracles and in teachings and in prophecies. A story of unlikely heroes and uncomfortable truths and rejected truth tellers. It is a story that upends our expectations and makes everything we think is right about our world into a wrong, and everything we take as true into false. The story we tell on Easter is the story of change and new life. It is not the story of the status quo. It is not the story of returning to who we were before. It is not the story of our usual pews or our beloved traditions. It is a story which reveals a Savior who came in an unlikely way to proclaim unlikely news with unlikely followers, an unlikely Christ who died a ridiculously likely death at the hands of the powerful. Theologians have many, many different understandings for Easter, what we're doing today, why we celebrate it this way, this morning. There are many theories for what it all means. More significant than these theories, however, is that the redemptive power of Jesus was revealed to us in the crucifixion at all. Right? And more to the point, that it is revealed through the crucifixion rather than by it. Right? That it is revealed in the crucifixion as if it is revealed in all the other moments of Jesus' life and love and sacrifice. The whole story is revealed in any one of its points. As revealed in the curing of the demoniac and the feeding of the multitudes, as revealed in eating with the unsavory and redeeming the lost. It is the life Jesus lived that gives power to this moment, this very moment. And it serves as part of the picture, as an element of this story, of the revealing of the real Jesus. Too often we hear that Jesus' death matters more to the cosmos than his life does. But I say that regardless of his death and even his resurrection, it is his life, and it is the story Jesus' life reveals that really matters. The story of God's love of humanity, God's mercy for the weak, God's hope for us all. It is the dream Jesus works to fulfill in the upside-down economy he hopes we embody, that he enfleshed for 3 decades and taught people to enflesh for themselves. Easter is a time of rejoicing, of praising God and singing alleluias. It is a day of happiness and gratitude, and it is a season of relief from those dark days of Lent. It is also a season of embodying this story and giving new life to our work of restoring creation. It is a moment of respite and a story of great struggle and a break from a long, tiring journey. Easter captures the spirit of the story and is the embodiment of the story. It is the story. A story of liberation and hope and mercy to a people marginalized by the powerful. A story of our work and our participation in a great big project which needs all of us to complete. A story that calls us to participate, like a choose-your-own-adventure that calls us to embody the story, like Mary Magdalene, and to tell the good news that our God destroys death and our Savior lives. Because ours is a God who is with us, always, to the end of the age.